This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero 2013 in Friedrichshafen, Germany. I'm with my friend and colleague, Thomas Burchard of Flieger Mag. Thomas, we've been talking about flying around Europe and Germany, and you've flown in the U.S. I've flown a little bit in Germany. It's different here, and you often say things that cause my eyes to enlarge to the size of dinner plates at the sort of regulation you have. Tell us a little bit about that, starting with the VFR, how it's different here than it is in the U.S.
Right. Well, it's also different across Europe. So, I mean, we have had EASA, the agency, for quite a while, but still there's no such thing as a Europe-wide standardization. So in Germany, for example, you're required to have current charts, and that includes not only en route charts, sectionals as you would call them, but also every airfield has a VFR approach chart, and you have to have those too, and the subscription to them, to Jeppesen, is not really cheap. All airfields, especially in Germany, have traffic patterns that are depicted on that chart, and you're required to follow them. There's some debate and some legal discussion how strictly you have to follow them, but one local aviation authority has declared that you have to follow them to 500 feet left or right, which of course is crazy. I mean, at 90 knots in the pattern, it's like 3 seconds. Most of these are geared towards avoiding noise in the neighborhood, so they can have some really weird hard-to-fly patterns, and that leads to people looking at their GPSs instead of outside in the traffic pattern, which is kind of crazy. Then we have in Germany this rule that even at the smallest fields, you have to have an official observer present, not someone that can direct traffic. They are not equipped for that. They are not trained for that. They're just there to tell you the wind and the landing direction, basically. Many German pilots have become so used to that that they consider these guys to be controllers, and they ask for taxi clearances on uncontrolled fields, which is really kind of weird. And that then they sit there and say things like, ready for departure. And when I hear that, I always think, yeah, so go.
Now, you tell me that if that observer isn't present, the field is officially closed?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. And you have to, I mean, one of the really important three-letter acronyms you have to learn when flying in Europe is PPR, prior permission required. So you have to call in advance and then pay the guy to stay longer if you want to come in late. So many of these airfields are run by clubs, and they just don't have the money to put a professional there, which leads us to the next point. Even the smallest airfields in Germany and in Europe have landing fees. So you're talking about anything from $5 to $20. Louder aircraft are normally more expensive. That means that most European pilots can't land well, because doing 10 practice landings will set you back $100 or something like that.
Well, it seems to me you'd be better off flying to the U.S., renting an airplane, doing your landings there, and flying back. It would be cheaper almost, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the equivalency point there is somewhere around 10 to 15 hours. So if you want to fly 15 hours and have 2 weeks of vacation time, just go to Florida and do it there.
And how about, you mentioned these patterns, and you showed me one of the patterns that was kind of a trapezoidal shape. And then there was a VFR approach into that you have to fly?
No, that is the VFR approach. Okay. So you have to enter the pattern at one of the corners or at some depicted point, and then you have to fly that trapezoid shape. I've once flown that pattern, and then the guy, I made a turn, and the guy said, that was not over the Red Schoolhouse. And I said, no, I'm not from here. I don't know the Red Schoolhouse. And that, I mean, of course, the ground was full of red roofs.
When you get into IFR, it gets a little bit more complicated. And does that mean there's a reluctance to fly IFR? Or tell us a little bit about some of the details there.
First of all, there are very few airfields with IFR approaches. Getting an IFR approach is a nightmare. The G airfield of our capital, Berlin, has been trying for over a decade to get one. And they have been fighting everything from nature protection people to neighbors fearing the airlines as soon as there's an IFR approach to obstacle removal problems, stuff like that. They're now in the last stages of fighting it out in the courts, but probably in a year there will be one. The big thing is that while there's still no single European sky, as the project is actually called by EASA. So it's still every country has their own airspace, their own air traffic control. Still, there's a central flow management unit in Brussels, as they call it. And that's basically a big computer that has to approve your IFR routing. So you send it there via the internet and then you get back, yes, that routing is okay, or no, you have to route something differently. It doesn't tell you how. So until about 2 years ago, that was a huge problem and could take a huge amount of time. Now there's an online service called Rocket Route, which you can subscribe to for 17 euros per month, and then their computer will figure out a routing. And these can change daily. The Frankfurt airspace, all the airways are such that you can't fly through there below 14,000 feet, for example, which is undoable for most GA airplanes.
Now, you mentioned that below 4,000 pounds, there's no user fee for flying IFR, but you got to get your Visa card out for the approach.
Correct. 2 metric tons is the limit, and that's where in Europe you can fly without airway charges, as it's called. That's one of the reasons why you can get the Piper Seneca here, with a weight limit of 1,999 kilograms, whereas in the U.S. it's somewhere around 2,130 or something like that. Many people do that to save the airways charges because it's the maximum takeoff weight that defines that. And then when it comes to approaches at the big airfields, they charge an additional approach navigation charge of about 17 bucks, something like that.
So you're not really going to go out and shoot 4 approaches and 10 landings for an afternoon's flying?
Well, the 4 approaches you would do at an airfield... at an airfield that is smaller, not one of the big ones. And they then tend to charge something like a landing fee per 2 approaches or something like that. So they really want you to land so that they can charge you. That's one of the big differences to flying in the U.S. In the U.S., you can just do 3 touch-and-goes and be on your way. Here, you do 3 touch-and-goes, you have to land, stop, shut down, get out, pay, get in, start up again. It takes so much longer.
How can you stand it here? I mean, why do people, in Germany specifically, but in Europe in general, still stay at this? And we're looking around Aero here, and there are hundreds of pilots.
Yeah, pilots are somewhat hard-nosed, right? I mean, in the U.S., they complain a lot. I always have to smile when I hear that, because then there's also fuel prices. So basically, I mean, it's just people really want to fly. But there are so few. I mean, the percentage of pilots versus the population here is just much lower than in the U.S.
Do you think any of those fees and regulations are going to be rolled back? I mean, there's been talk about that. EASA talks a nice game. Are they going to actually perform?
So far, they've done very little. There's only one thing that they have just published that will lower cost of flying and the effort a little bit, and that's an easier to get instrument rating. And that's about the only thing I can think of where they have made stuff easier. For example, because they can't agree on managing the airspace in Europe centrally, we have a shortage of frequencies. So the solution is to mandate 8.33 kilohertz spacing in the frequencies. And that starts for IFR flying in 2014. So everybody has to get new radios.
Well, Thomas, why don't you come to Florida again and we'll go out and shoot as many touch-and-goes in the Cub as you'd like.
Yeah, I'm game. I'm coming.
Well, come on over. We've been speaking with Thomas Prochet of Flieger Magazine. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero 2013. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.